is ordinance number 2403, perimeter buffers around residential developments.
There they come.
Excuse me.
That's this number six on there. While he's doing that, get myself situated. This one is a little longer than the other one, just, I mean, his heads up.
Who's pushing the start button for 10 minutes?
I'm going to try to keep it close. Did you get it? Okay.
Yeah, that one?
So this is the perimeter buffer ordinance. And this one's got some history to it in terms of how we got from where we started to here. It really goes back to the comprehensive plan that we have in place. It goes a little bit back, or a little more recent than that, to that joint workshop with County Council on Planning and Zoning. And I think you all were at, I don't remember, yeah, you all were there. Mm-hmm. And there was multiple topics talked about at that time. And then I know council ranked issues of priority. And this one, based on that ranking and the weights they gave it, was the number one issue of that they wanted to tackle first. And in addition to all that, you all don't hear that much about it as appointed officials. Staff hears about buffers all the time, and county council hears about buffers all the time, from developers, from people living within developments, people living next to developments that are being constructed, people driving down the road, kind of across all walks of life. And I'm going to list off some of the topics, and Mr. Whitehouse may fill in the blanks on these, but we hear a lot about the insufficiency of the buffers currently in our code. In other words, how big are they and what's required in them? We hear, and this is in no particular order, but tree removal in the buffers, basically what I'll say is unnecessary tree removal. If you've got a forested piece of property or a piece of property that has forest along the edge of it, why are we taking that full-growth forest out and then planting brand new trees that are this tall? You know, when we had trees that were fairly significant there in the first place, you know, why do that? We hear about the timing of the buffer installation. In other words, when does that happen in conjunction with the development site work, you know, in terms of how that's all being coordinated, and when it's being completed in conjunction with the development site work and building construction. We also, in our code, currently have inconsistent requirements. We have the original perimeter buffer standards that go back close to 20 years at this point in Chapter 99 that requires a 20-foot buffer and has planning requirements and spells it out pretty clearly with a two-year bonding requirement and other things. But then we also have totally separate buffer requirements in Chapter 115 for cluster subdivisions that is 30 feet with a different set of planning requirements. So there's inconsistencies. Plus, at this point, essentially all we're seeing is cluster subdivisions. So that definition is not as good, yet it's the one that gets used all the time. And so one of the goals of this is to clean that up and put it all in one place and make it one set of standards. Another topic we hear about quite frequently is, you know, even if we're keeping trees or if trees have been planted, that at some point during construction, the buffer is being damaged. And what are you going to do about it? Or the trees are dying. You know, we've been requiring at the commission silt fences to be installed on the interior side of that. But at the same time, still, you know, there's site work contractors that, you know, whether the silt fence is there or not, you know, they'll tear up the root structure or the tree itself. It just happens. And then, as I said, just preservation of the existing buffers sort of in perpetuity, whether that's existing trees or trees that are planted. So that's just sort of a laundry list of things that council hears and staff hears all the time. I mean, it's on the regular, I would say. Yeah. So with that, this is just an overview of and I sort of all went through this. It goes back to the directions of county council and the ordinance that was introduced by county council. The first part of the ordinance established or replaced definitions within the code. They're all in the ordinance that you have. I'm not going to read those, but some of the important ones we had to establish were a definition of clearing or cleared. We wanted a forest assessment definition so that if there's existing trees within a subdivision along the perimeter, there would be an assessment of that so you have a baseline to know what's there so that you know what's getting preserved or what may be getting damaged down the line. There is the perimeter buffer. We made that a standard 30-foot in width buffer. Perimeter buffer landscape plan. We kind of require that now, you know, as part of an approval. There's a landscape plan, but in this case, it's more specifically defined what we want in that landscape plan in the code. The one really new part of this is the perimeter buffer protection area. That applies if you have existing trees in the buffer along the perimeter of a subdivision. And this was one of the areas that I know there was a lot of discussion at council about, is how do we preserve those existing trees? So if you have 30 feet, the problem is if you have a big piece of equipment that comes right in at 31 feet and wrecks the root structure of those trees within the 30 feet, that effectively kills trees, you know, within at least 5 or 10 feet of that line. So there's all different ways to do it. Do you try to figure it out from the drip edge of the trees, which is a variable that, you know, just depends. And everybody has, there's a lot of different opinions on the dimension of that, whether it's wide, small, and, you know, it depends on the type of tree and everything else. So the proposal is, rather than try to have it some arbitrary case-by-case determination, if you have existing woods, there's a perimeter buffer protection area on the outside of that that's an additional 20 feet, again, to preserve that 30 foot of existing woodlands. And then we establish a definition of woodlands. The second section is just general standards. This actually starts at line 292 for those of you following along. And this is the standards for within the buffers. All the trees and shrubs must be local and native species. That was another exercise. You would think there'd be a list somewhere that somebody has of local and native species. There is not. I mean, Mr. Whitehouse looked and talked. We've talked to the Department of Agriculture, Forestry Service, and there's just not a list. At one point, they said they were working on one, but I don't think it's completed.
It's kind of one that's been.
And we didn't want kind of one. If we were going to cite to one, there had to be one.
How hard can that be?
All right. I'm surprised.
There is one. There's a list that Newcastle County has, and I don't remember if it's incorporated into its Uniform Development Code or if it's just, you know, a link to it or cited by it. We pulled that, and it was like 400 different kinds of trees and, like, you know, 50 different kinds of oak trees of all different types, and it just, that got too complex. So, you know, we just went for simpler in terms of local and native species. ANSI 3A300 standards, 70% deciduous, 30% evergreen, 15 trees per 100 feet of buffer. All trees and shrubs must be 6 feet in height at the time of planting and obtain a minimum height of 10 feet, so at some point they at least have to grow beyond 10 feet. The buffer can include both existing woodlands and planted trees. If there is a resource buffer, you know, like there's wetlands around.
Just curious, sure. Question. I'll go back to this just for a second. What's the difference between a local and a native species? Is a local species a species that moved here and's been here for like 10 years?
So,
correct. That is not a local.
So they're interchangeable, but local and native employees obtained locally in that respect.
Okay.
But native is native, so we would always use that as.
So
the
I always
speech.
Think of allele in cypress, which is not a native species, but we're planted all over the place. They might as well be because they're everywhere. I believe that's your point.
I don't know.
Just for the trees, if
maybe
you.
Not. I may be wrong about that.
The state of Maryland is called Aiton Nurseries. It's run by the Department of Natural Resources, and they do just native species to the Eastern Shore, white oak, sawtooth, elderberries, on and on. So they have a list of those trees that are native to here. So, and you could, it has a variety of bushes to berry trees for birds to everything. Might be something interested to look at.
I mean, we will. I'll tell you, just that sort of really big picture on this, we're always reluctant to defer to somebody else's list because it gives somebody else, at the Delaware level, you know, the ability to have input on how, you know, Sussex County handles its affairs.
So
that's something to think about, and it may be if they have a list, we don't reference that list specifically, but we look at what's on the list and create our own.
Yeah.
What I see is like crepe myrtles are a huge attractant of Japanese beetles,
right.
And they attack everything. I mean, they're going to be here for a lifetime. And different funguses and bacteria, so I think we should look at definitely native trees. Go ahead.
Correct. So there are things that we know to be native that are absolutely no contest, but to have a defined list can change over time. There's various guidance documents that we can refer to.
You brought that for me, didn't you?
But this is not as extensive as others. But there will be times, I think 90% of cases, there's going to be no contest between the applicant and staff. That's native, that's local, 100%. It's only in some cases where it's like so.
Thank you, Jamie. Or Mr. Whitehouse.
Should have just let him talk on that. It would have been quicker. If there's a resource buffer involved because there's wetlands or environmental issues along the perimeter, the resource buffer is always going to take precedent. I mean, obviously, we're not going to require somebody to go plant trees in a wetlands area or a buffer area that's governed by the other part. And then in all cases, there's signage that marks the perimeter buffer. So it breaks down into sort of two categories in the ordinance. One is where there's existing woodlands, and one is where there's no woodlands. The idea is to preserve those woods, and then when there's none, the idea is that you'd have to plant the new ones to comply with that. So looking at the first category where there's existing woodlands, again, there has to be that forest assessment. The woodlands need to be shown on the site plans. They need to remain natural state with limited activity. The perimeter buffer will be protected by that buffer protection area. It's like a buffer to the buffer, like we talked about, to preserve those woods. The buffer and protection area will be fenced off with silt fencing and marked during construction. Selective clearing removal of invasive species and dead trees in the woodlands is permitted. Again, walking trails are permitted. Access points for buffer maintenance is permitted. We pulled that from the resource buffer requirements. Obviously, you need to be able to get through between lots or whatever to get to the buffers to maintain those areas. Any removal or damage of trees within the woodlands is subject to mitigation requirements, which we'll get to in a second. And the woodlands ground is forbidden to be cleared, graded, or grubbed, again, to not disturb the roots in those areas. To give you an idea just what it would look like, one of the things is a picture's worth a thousand words. We actually inserted this into the ordinance to show. And so on the left, you'll see the perimeter buffer. That's where the trees are. And then sort of in the middle, there's that perimeter buffer protection area, which is the 20 feet. And then there is the silt fencing and then the signage at 100-foot intervals. The 100-foot intervals, I think that there's another spot in the code that requires that, the idea being that from every lot, you would be able to see one someplace. So, but that's what, in theory, what that would look like. The other sort of criteria that there was a push for at the council level was to avoid somebody making an end run around the tree preservation by clearing it, and then some reasonable period of time prior to application. So there's requirements for woodlands that are cleared within 5 years prior to the application. And I don't know, you probably don't need to go through it, but the staff has the ability through our eagle view and aerial photography that we have to verify that with a real fairly specific degree of certainty, whether trees existed or not. But if that was cleared, then it has to be replanted with 15 trees every 50 linear feet. So it basically doubles up the tree density you have to require. The idea is that if you have existing woodlands that provide a natural screen through large growth and underbrush and everything else, and you clear that out, you've eliminated that completely. So 15 trees every 100 feet is going to take a long time to regenerate that screening for the buffer. So that's why there's the recommendation to double that to try to get it back to close to what it was at 15 trees every 50 linear feet. There's another requirement that staff had pushed for and council had talked about was that there's, in addition to the 30-foot buffer, there is new woodlands planted at least two times the size of the cleared area at a tree density of 50 feet or 50 trees per acre. In other words, you have to go out and reforest someplace else equivalent to what you cleared, sort of a compensation for that. And it has to be, it can be off-site as well, and if it is, it has to be protected by a conservation easement. So if there's no woodlands, it's similar to what we have now, just with a 30-foot requirement. The developer must comply with the perimeter buffer standards that we talked about. the 30 feet. It again needs to be silt fenced and marked during construction. There's a 2-year guarantee for the planning, and there it doesn't say it here, but there would also be that signage so that, you know, within the development, you wouldn't see creep. One of the things I didn't talk about here, and we showed at the council level, was people's backyards creeping into the common space or the buffer, you know, and taking that. We actually saw that on a solar farm. If you recall, one of the gentlemen that spoke in opposition to the solar farm, we looked at his property, and behind his lot, he cleared out what had been the buffer, which would have screened the solar farm.
That's right.
You know, so that's why there's the signage requirement, so that even on these where it's planted, it's covered. And this is also in the definition, just to show you what it looked like. Planting, it's 30-foot minimum with the silt fencing and then the signage every 100
feet. Can I interrupt you with a question?
Sure.
So if somebody wants to clear the timber from their land, they're not planning to farm it, or maybe they are eventually, what's the 5-year timeline? So they...
5 years back, and it wouldn't be from timbering their land. It would be from removal of the timber along the buffer area.
Oh, just for the... Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So if you were doing a timber harvest, then, you know, that wouldn't impact it. It would only occur if the timber harvest included the 30 feet
on the neighbor.
Along
okay.
the edge. Yeah.
Thank you.
And it's from the date of application.
I have one question, too. So we go to the 50-foot trees. So have you ever visited a cutover 3 or 4 years later? And you know how thick and tight they are. So with the 50-foot spacing, and forestry is probably much smarter than me because I asked them a question when I have a question. So what you're going to promote is briar growth and everything else. So the theory that I follow in forestry is I create a tighter tree, which right now my farms are planted at 25 feet. We just, what they call it, 20 to 1. So we just increased that 40 to 1, and we're at the 25-year mark. One is for wind shear. Two, it helps drop the lower branches to make a productive tree later on in the future. A tree has a life cycle. They don't live forever. So then it gives you the opportunity for undergrowth to start under those trees and then nurture their way up to that. So it's a constant regeneration of the tree. You see what I'm saying? So a 50 to 1, you're going to get gigantic trees. You're going to get people encroaching into those areas where you would have, if you went down to even 30, you're going to have attrition of trees. Trees are going to die. I've just planted 150 chestnuts, American chestnut trees, which are endangered, and I've probably lost 10% of them. That's what I'm saying.
Is it 50 to per acre? When you say 50 to 1, is the
acre?
It
goes by spacing. 50 to 1 depends on the variety of the tree, like hardwood versus softwood.
But I guess my question is, so is it 50 trees per, or maybe it's 20 or whatever, but is the one, does that refer to the acre?
So it's 50 trees per acre.
Okay, all right.
That sounds like a lot of trees, but you're going to have attrition. So right now, this has nothing to do with what we're talking about now, is we're starting to beginning to shift to a pine bark beetle outbreak. Delaware did the million tree deal. Trees are too tight. They need to be thinned. It's going to spread heavy growth if we do not control the yellow pine bark beetle. That's why I had to cut my farm, or one of my farms, is to save the forest. If I don't do it, it's all dead. So, I mean, it's just food for thought. Rob Gannett is a great guy. He's a genius. So I'm sure you've talked to him, maybe. Talked to him.
Yeah, and kind of what you're leading to also was the decision about having it 30 feet with the 20, because when we talk to the foresters as well, there's an issue of wind shear, like I think you mentioned. You know, if you have too narrow, in addition to the damage that occurs during site work, if you keep trees that had been part of a forest and you keep 20 feet of them, they're used to being part of a larger forest, and they've grown that way. So that makes it harder for them to survive if it's a narrow band. You know, if you get a little bit wider, there's a greater likelihood.
Yeah, a tree can actually get sunburned.
Yeah, no, windburn and sunburn both, yeah. Which I didn't know, but it was something we learned along the way. So we're not going into all that detail, but that's helpful. But just so you all know, that was all part of the conversation.
It just puts back, if you go to a 30 or a 40, it just starts to get that natural growth going again. it gets that natural flora back. So it will help control runoff and everything else. So I'm going to be quiet now and I'll let you talk.
No, that's fine. It's all good.
I'm getting hungry.
So that was the example of the planted buffer. We talked about a little bit. There is a forested, a perimeter buffer landscape plan. And this starts at line 429 of the ordinance. Let's make sure I'm on the right page. I'm not going to go through each one of these, but this is information that would be shown on the landscape plan. We wanted to specify, you know, so again, it's not an ad hoc requirement. It's in code. This is what you've got to show on it. Again, it's so that there's a baseline that staff and the inspectors can look at to make sure that what you say you're planted is getting planted where it's supposed to be planted as well.
A number of these are in code now. Some are additional.
Timing, bonds, and guarantees. This is, it starts at line 473 of the ordinance. This is one that we've really kind of clarified things on. And it goes back to the issues we hear about timing within subdivisions. And we had a lot of conversation about what's appropriate and also what works, because there's sometimes, two different things. You know, everybody would love the buffer to be planted before anything else happens, site work or anything on a site. But the fact of the matter is you can't do that because grade elevations may change as part of the site work. You got to get to the buffer, which requires site work. You know, you might need to do some Sussex Conservation District work that changes the buffer design and buffer layout and buffer planning and everything else. And so that's just not feasible with the way land development works anywhere. That's not a code issue. That's just the fact of making this all work together. So what this now requires is that the perimeter buffer per phase must be planted prior to the first residential building permit for the respective phase. So that means you're going to get your site work in or started. You're going to have access to the buffer areas. You're going to plant those first before you pull a residential building permit. That way, you know, first of all, the houses are going up subject to the buffer, and also the adjacent properties are also somewhat screened because there's a buffer that's in there first before the building.
I think that's a great idea to do it by phase too, because we've been allowing it at the end.
Right. Right, and jump into the last bullet, there's also a requirement that you can't move on to the next phase until you've got the prior phase completely planted. You know, so in other words, you can't just hopscotch around and have a whole bunch of different phases underway. You're going to have to make sure the buffer's in on each one before you move to the next one. You know, and that's significant. Again, where the woodlands exist, the buffer and protection area shall be protected and marked. The developer is responsible for removal of all stakes and guy wires when that's done. There has to be a performance bond or other guarantee to cover the perimeter buffer in an amount of 125% or $50,000, whichever is greater, of the cost of the installation and the value of the replacement plantings. All guarantees for the perimeter buffer existing or planted will be for a period of 2 years. And the perimeter buffer, again, as I said, must be planted and inspected before moving to the next phase. So this actually sort of extends the assurance that the trees are alive, because how this will work now is you will, you know, start your plant, your perimeter buffer, get it done before the first building permit. You'll go all build all those buildings, homes in that development, in that phase of that development. Then you'll get substantial completion from the county, and then the 2 years starts to run. So there's, you know, it eliminates the situation or mitigates the situation where, you know, trees are in, they're barely growing, developer's gone, they die, what do we do now? You know, so it prevents that from, or addresses that concern. Perimeter buffer maintenance starts at line 518. And this is fairly self-explanatory, like I mentioned. The developer's responsible for the survivor of the buffer. And also, just like it is now, the perpetual maintenance of the buffer is recorded in restrictive covenants, and we require that now. That's not a new requirement. Tree mitigation starts at line 540. And this says that a tree mitigation will be recorded when there's damage to existing trees or shrubbed or they're removed without authorization. It doesn't include an act of God or nature, you know, where the tree falls over or whatever else. It's more intentional removal or damage to trees. And if that occurs, you've got to replace the trees at a rate of 3 trees for every one that's removed or damaged. And we have this. I mean, Mr. Whitehouse and the constables have had to deal with this fairly regularly. It's not really codified all that well, so this just puts it into code what's going to be required. And again, all trees and shrubs that you have to plant meet those standards. And then violations and penalties, line 567. This is sort of the enforcement side of it. The penalties apply to a violation by any person, the landowner, the HOA, or developer. It's a fine of $10,000 per quarter acre pro rata of disturbance to the perimeter buffer and or protection area that may be imposed. That's not a number that we pulled out of thin air. That's actually in the resource buffer now. So for consistency, if you damage a resource buffer, we looked at how that was handled. It's the same here. You're going to be...
Going back to the timing and who's responsible when, you know, I have a little bit of a concern that the HOA at the time of turnover could be getting a buffer that in fact is in violation. And I'm wondering if we should have have the developer be responsible for maintaining the buffer until that's turned over to the HOA.
That's actually how it's worded now. Will say, as from an administrative side, we don't necessarily know when that happens. That we could add that back in because it's in the code now. I think it's a earlier or later to occur kind of language in the code now without looking at it. I can't remember. But you know, one of the thoughts was, first of all, we're extending it a little bit, making the time period from planning to walk away is longer, like I said. But trying to just peg it with a year, because that just makes it easier to know on a calendar. There's not a right or wrong answer on that.
It's a difficult situation because a lot of times it can be that the HOAs don't know who's responsible for what when.
Right.
And if they're, you know, and if they're not getting a transition study, for instance, during, you know, prior to turnover, they may not find out that there is an issue against which they had recourse to against the developer until it's too late. You know, that's my concern. But maybe
if the bond is put up by the developer, wouldn't that trigger for them to turn that bond or take?
If it's within the 2 years, so but it is possible that outside the 2 years, if they hand over to the HOA is outside the 2 years, they could be inheriting a problem. It's possible. So.
Yeah,
I'd have to think about this. I'm throwing this out.
Just,
you know,
it's
also maybe that the bond
the,
has to be in place
the,
until the time of turnover.
For the
also,
HOA,
you know, so,
yeah, for the HOA,
yeah,
you know, that's okay. All right. Okay. Go
bear
ahead.
With me. Sorry. I'm just writing a note on that. And then, which we do now, if somebody goes out and damages it, you know, we put a hold on building permits. You know, that gets folks' attention, so real fast. So essentially, you know, that's the bulk of the presentation. You know, there's a lot there. The ordinance itself is fairly lengthy because we had to delete everything and rewrite it. You know, we got to do the strike-throughs and deletes and stuff. But that's the bulk of it. So. I know that council felt very strongly about moving forward with this, with the 30 and the 20. They also felt very strongly about having consequences for damaging the buffer. That was always one that several council members in particular, but council as a body, felt strongly about.
Actually, the language said may fine. Should that just be will?
Yeah. There's always the possibility, if you make it a shall requirement, there's no discretion. There's always going to be that case. For example, what if, you know, a child went out and wanted to cut and do some yard work for their parents as a good deed, and they cut down 5 trees. The intent here is to restore. There might be a restoration path rather than going down that route in all cases. So we would always look at the intent, but that's what the signs are there for too. So we would look at each case on its own merits, is what I'm trying to say. So
I think about, you know, enforcement of parking regulations when I park someplace. There's really no wiggling out of.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's all a good point. I think there has to be some flexibility. But the other thing that's a big part of this is education as well with the signage, you know, because right now, as I said, we see all the time that people don't realize that necessarily that's something that's on a site plan, you know, and that it's a non-disturbance area, it's not part of their backyard. I know Mr. Lawson had a picture of somebody. This had less to do maybe with buffers and more to do with common areas, you know, like a forest area in the middle of a subdivision that somebody had literally gone and cleared it out, not on their property, put their bonfire and Adirondack chairs all around it, you know. So it's that kind of thing. We want to make sure that folks know, you know, what's part of their, their
common areas. I remember the picture. I probably would have been somebody that would do that, you know, in the past.
Remember, so. These are all just like.
I know. I've not done that.
In the past. Long ago.
Any other questions for me?
I have one. Okay. So I'm reading the easement right now. So this is for a different state, and I'm reading it right now. This is one of my easements. And as a county, we're trying to control everything and do everything ourselves, which drives up costs, which is going to drive tax, which is going to drive everything. This easement here is controlled by an outside company. That monitors easements they monitor the trees, the tree growth, the density, and then they make a report and just give you a recommendation, and that would be by the HOA.
Well, so keep in mind on these that there's not an easement. It's just if there's a buffer.
Or the buffer, I'm sorry.
Yeah, if the buffer's it's either planted or if it's trees, that's going to be governed. Preservation, that's going to be governed by code, but also we require it to be governed by the homeowner association's restrictive covenant. So there's not a party involved in that, because I get what you're saying. The easement came in, though, is if somebody goes in there within 5 years and clear cuts existing woodlands along within the perimeter area, they've got to restore that at double the size of the acreage. And you could do it on site, which would still be governed by the restrictive covenants. Just give you the option so that you don't necessarily lose lots within your subdivision if you're designing it, that you could also go within, and there's a geographical limitation, but you could go acquire or get your own easement on another piece of property, preserve that, and if you're going to do that, then there has to be a conservation easement on that.
That's I'm just all. Reading it through. This is very cheap. I mean, and I can show it to you later or forward it to you, and you can read it and just get a good opinion. I just hate to see us spend more money driving up, and we're reducing land at a rapid rate.
Well, no, I agree with that. And again, sort of peeling back the layers too, one of the things we looked at was in this, and we looked at examples of other subdivisions to see whether it was feasible, you know, with the open space requirements to make sure that if we do the 30 feet, which is already required, so that's not going to change anything. If we add the additional 20 feet, is that going to impact the design of a cluster subdivision? And you know, a lot of the cluster subdivisions that you all know we see, you know, they're running right now way over the minimum open space required. You know, we're seeing, I don't know, like in the 40s of percentage of open space. So when we look now, it's all going to depend on the geometry of a piece of property, you know, what you can fit on there, obviously, and how you lay your roads out. But you know, just on its face, this doesn't cut into the open space or reduce density, because we're always sensitive to that. I can't say that it won't in a given case, or you lose a lot here and there, but it's not going to have a wholesale impact on density in a two-unit per acre cluster subdivision.
The 20-foot buffer that protects the 30-foot natural buffer, can you remove trees from that? Or is it technically a 50-foot buffer?
You want to take that one? Or?
The 30-foot buffer is the 30. Actually, we had.
Yeah.
We go back.
There's a reason for my question.
Yeah. Right. So, this. So the signage is outside the perimeter buffer protection area, i.e., the no-cut warning signage. And the intention is that the perimeter buffer protection area also be protected. But in that perimeter buffer protection area, there is a likelihood that native species will naturally seed that area and wish to grow in that area. So there's language in the ordinance that if invasive species come in and start to inhabit that area, they can be removed, no problem at all.
Can developers remove trees from the 20-foot perimeter buffer protection area? existing trees?
You can, yeah.
Okay, that's what I'm leading up to. In my career, I've seen when you tear a big tree down, you damage the trees within 20 feet. So I'm going to suggest that any trees removed within the buffer protection area be cut to the stump and left, or cut and grinded. When you start pulling out the stump, with its lateral root system, it's going to rip out the roots all around it, and it's going to defeat the purpose of the perimeter buffer.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay.
Let them rot naturally.
Because it talks about that, but I don't know that it talks about that specifically and clearly.
Yeah. You know, if you just allow them to clear trees and bulldoze the stumps, it's going to disturb the root system in the 30-foot buffer because of lateral roots.
Leave them or grind them.
Which was the intention for having the perimeter buffer in the first place to protect the ones in the 30 feet. So,
right.
There you go.
Yeah, so if we're protecting that 30-foot buffer, I just think trees within there should not be allowed to rip the root system of the trees that are removed.
I agree. Good idea.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
I'm sure my presentation was only 10 minutes. It was all the questions that were asked.
Well, it was 13. It was 13, but commissioners talked for 5.
We'll see. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, let me just ask a question. How many folks in the room intend to speak this afternoon? Okay. Commissioners, it's 10 after 5. Do you want to take a recess, or do you want to keep rolling? Say what?
Okay. Whatever you guys want. I'm good either way.
It doesn't matter to me either way.
I'm fine either way.
All right. Well, I'm sure these people don't want to wait, so we'll keep rolling. Anybody that needs to take an individual break,
about
go
5
ahead.
Minutes.
But reminding you, commissioners, no more than one at a time can leave.
Let's take a 5.
Okay, I'll tell you what. We're going to take just a 5-minute recess, okay?